Let's talk a little bit about the various kinds of processes which you could administer to an individual. And if you've gotten the idea that just because I write some things down on a mimeographed piece of paper, this is the total arrangement of processes possible. If you've gotten that idea, I'd be very surprised. But if you have, why disabuse yourself of it? When we write down the definitions of existence and the numbers of parts and factors of existence, we've written down something that's of first rank importance. But when we start talking about how you do various processes and arrange them and so forth, we're talking about something which is subject to change. Now, we've been talking here about, more or less in the factors and other writings, pretty much about the same thing for about a year. But we've sure been doing it in a lot of different ways. Now, this might become confusing to an auditor who didn't realize that all these processes stem from a definite, certain body of knowledge. Now, maybe we have not talked sufficiently about that body of knowledge. So let me go through just a very little elementary review of that body of knowledge. Without cataloging all of its parts or something of this sort, let's just take a look at the physical universe and at life in it and the problems and factors which face life. We discover we have somebody walking down the street who thinks and talks in terms of I. He's I. Now, we look at him very closely and we find out he's a fraud. He's talking in the first person, which makes us assume he is talking on the first dynamic. Not so. I, capital I, quote unquote, is a third dynamic expression when used by Homo sapiens. We are talking about an energy space production unit, and we are talking about a body, and we're talking about a collection of energy known as the reactive bank, and we're talking about a collection of machines which belong to this energy production unit. Anatomy. Now, this is observable anatomy. That it wasn't observed for a great many ages does not mean at any time that it wasn't there to be observed, because man looks very poorly. He generally looks into books to find out what's been copied from books. All right. If we have a poor look on it, there's no reason why, on a good, clean look, we shouldn't find relatively simple, understandable factors with which to work. Now, let's just take this anatomy. We can look for this anatomy, and we can find it. Let's take, first off, a body. If we look around, we can see a body. We can experience a body. And seeing and experiencing a body, we are able to ascertain the fact that there is an object there which is mobile, which has energy, and which has meaning. That's a body. It is capable of many things, incapable of many things, so forth. It has a lot of considerations connected with it, a lot of meanings. But there it is. Now, you can experience this, so it's the first thing one would observe. It seems that man's observation of all of this began and ended right there, a body. Some writers on the track, by the way, have been so poor at observing that they never discovered any of the meanings in a person, but would simply characterize their characters and their stories by their clothes. You know, he was a nice man, he was well-dressed. This was a character, and he walked in with a top hat on and a wing collar. They didn't even penetrate any deeper than just the clothes which covered the body. That's a very shallow look indeed. But people who were very, very deep and who searched a great deal on the thing discovered that there were different types of meanings underneath these clothes, and they became writers of great significance. We have Tolstoy, and we have Dostoevsky, and Gogol, and very few people in the Western world have ever done this. Now, as they looked a little deeper along the track, they discovered time after time that people did strange and peculiar things, and because they didn't want to look any deeper, they said, these are inexplicable, you know, and dropped it right there. And then some fellows came along who made a profession out of philosophy, and they started to discover the various meanings to life, by which they meant, where do these bodies wander and what do they do? Had nothing to do with life. We're still talking about a body. This concentration on the body is fabulous, utterly fabulous. If you were to break down processing into workable process, you'd find out that there were two addresses to all this. There was a subjective and objective processes. Now, as we said, objective, we mean attention off the body, subjective attention on the body. If you don't watch yourself as an auditor, because your preclear is so intensely subjective in his interest, you're liable to run nothing but subjective processes. If you don't watch yourself. Every researcher in the past has almost uniformly made this error. He might start with a few objective processes, but the first thing you know, zoom, he was right in there with subjective processes, mostly because the attention was on the body, on the body, on the body. Well, Freud came along and took the clothes off. And we were able to observe then that male and female bodies, even in literature, had certain topographical differences. And Freud went a little bit further. He said there's a mysterious thing here called the mind, and these topographical differences influence it. So we made this tremendous stride forward. We had gotten the body's clothes off at last and had been able to characterize deeper than the broadcloth. Now, surgery, with the advent of a certain witch doctor, medicine man, in the upper Andes, made its debut into trying to understand the body by trepanning. A few thousand years ago, down in Ecuador, they used to trepan boys who had skull concussions and bring about relief of pressure on the brain and so forth. And having discovered then that you could make a hole in a skull or make a hole in a body, man knew no limits. He had already discovered this in fighting, but as little as two centuries ago, any soldier knew more about the insides of a body than most doctors. But that was because doctors had discovered that when you opened up bodies with knives and things like that, why, they died. But soldiers had known this for a long time. And a couple of centuries ago, medicine decided the best thing he could possibly do would be to get dead bodies and cut them up. And then we would discover what was inside the body. This is a baffling sort of a mystery, you see. But the way not to solve it would be to get some dead tissue. It's not functioning. So his concentration was upon the form, the mass, you might say, but not upon the meaning or the mobility. Mobility, well, he's kind of disinterested in its mobility. And they cut up dead bodies and so forth and make patients as dead as possible. Well, they discovered that surgery was all but impossible. The best cauterization which could be done was a carpenter's broad axe applied to the stump. And this was shocking, to say the least. But as we progressed, a fellow by the name of Pasteur came forward and says, there are germs. Now the field of study of the body had gotten down to this point of where they'd gotten down to a microscopic size. In other words, the thought of studying something would mean to study smaller and smaller parts of it. A fellow by the name of Leeuwenhoek had polished up a piece of glass and found out he could find animal kills. Well, it took Pasteur to find out how to kill them. And Pasteur, by the way, also tried to culture them, you know. He mainly was devoted to the wine industry of France. Medicine kind of overlooks this all the time. It was Lord Lister, who, finding out about the work of Pasteur, invented antiseptic surgery. We don't use that anymore, by the way. We use aseptic surgery, which is nothing like iodine or carbolic acid, something like that. What they do is just deny germs the run of the environment. And this is the way they commit their surgery today. The surgery, by the way, is mostly commented, not performed. Anyway, where we have this search dwindling out into modern times, we get just a deeper and deeper carve-up on the body and more devotion to function and more worship of dead tissue. And the word was, you know, for a long time, anytime you find a little animal kill, you kill it. You know, germs are bad. Germs are real bad. Body doesn't function in any other fashion but by the performance of things that are just like these germs. And you can give people certain antibiotics and utterly destroy tremendously functional bacterial life in the organism. Well, as we go along the track here, look it over, we find out that people are not very incisive on the subject of life. In fact, you might say that it practically hasn't been studied at all, because the salient parts of it were more or less left out. Even psychology didn't care to observe a facsimile. It talked about eidetic recalls. It talked about image pictures. Every once in a while in the back chapter or the back page, somebody mentions it as a careless aside that people also see things in images, and this is probably delusion. And then we skip it. Now, it has been up here to these recent times here that we've been able to take a look at the body and actually see if there was something else here. And that was what you might call the reactive bank, a stimulus-response bank, a mass of energy which worked this way and that way and which contained thoughts and so forth, which contained structures, which contained perceptions, this tremendous amount of material which we have about facsimiles, locks, secondaries, and later than that, about in all creative processes, you'll find these mental images, and later than that, these mental images. And these mental images, which a person can make, of course, are able to resolve an engram. Were you able to mock up an engram in its entirety, consecutively and in motion, it would, of course, tend to wipe out the engram you were duplicating. Why is this? Because it's a two-terminal universe. That's the only significance to that. These things are composed of energies, and you'd get an electrical discharge. This thing can hang together. This facsimile can hang together, actually, as long as it has super-individuality. And the moment it gets a high similarity, it wipes itself out. It takes a difference, then, or a different experience to hang up in the bank, something that hasn't happened before. Well, we get all this. We get the reactive mind. We get the body plus the reactive mind. Now we find out that we can alter the functions and performances and actually the matter of the body itself by doing various things with creative processing or processing of facsimiles, do various things to the body by treating this reactive mind. There's a little deeper look on the subject of therapy and structure and so forth. We have, first they had clothes on, and now they got clothes off, and then they tapped into the body and got on down to the bacteria and said, well, there's nothing you can do about this because it's just bugs everywhere. And they invented penicillin and got that under control, they thought, and they kind of abandoned it there. Actually, a body is predisposed to disease by these mental pictures it has, these facsimiles. Well, we found out not too long ago that these mental pictures, these facsimiles, are actually made by resistance. An individual resists with a flow of energy various consecutive scenes, and so he gets a sort of a mental motion picture in that mass of energy. And it's just a matter of resistance or trying to keep things from going away from him or trying to keep things from falling in on him. And he gets a picture, just like you'd make a picture out of plastic. Well, this is how he makes his facsimiles, of course, with great processing, with old Dianetics, with various things we can handle these. But we haven't looked yet all the way there is to look. And as a matter of fact, even what I'm telling you this morning, we haven't looked all the way there is to look. There's something else going on here. And a couple of years ago, I became alert to the fact something else was going on, which we wouldn't quite find in the textbooks, and had to study it very hard, found out that it bordered upon mysticism, religion, buffoonery, and so forth. But nobody really knew anything about it. You take the chakra, the chakra theory that the Indian Jews and so forth, they say there are seven things to exteriorize. They actually talk about exteriorization of something in that. They say there are seven things to exteriorize. And, of course, the last one they pick up is the thetan. If you tried to pick up number seven on the list, which is an entity, and exteriorize it before you exteriorize the thetan, you'd never get the thetan out of his head, believe me. You'd have to go back all the way through it and reprocess the guy entirely. So this was a beautiful booby trap. So if there was any knowledge on this subject, it was obscured, discredited, and so forth, because it was fixed up so that it wouldn't work. The knowledge might have been there, but the processes wouldn't work. How much was known about this? Well, just between ourselves, doggone little. You'll find some wild guesses saturated into a tremendous amount of bad data and not selected out or differentiated from the rest of the data. But this didn't take man any place. It had to be this. This thing alone was what spotted this existing situation. Of course, the existence of a soul and that sort of thing spotlighted the fact that we might have some more distance to look after we'd looked at the body in the engram bank. But what was this main life source? Where was the body getting its juice? By eating? All right, that's an interesting and easy way to resolve it. Then somebody else furnishes the juice. Where'd he get his juice? Well, he ate too. Yeah, he ate his juice from someplace else. The physicist tells you that it comes from the lichen and moss feasting off of sands and rock, who were able to produce enough juice to feed the rest of everything. Well, this is an interesting theory. And by the way, they didn't even have it as a theory. They just kind of guess at it. They posed the virus and so forth. Well, this would be fascinating, except that one comes up against the tone scale. Tone scale was observed behavior. People went through a certain level of tones. They changed in a certain pattern when engrams were run. And so we established a tone scale. And this tone scale seemed to indicate a standardization of behavior by which the behavior of certain people could be predicted. You knew where he was in the tone scale in one respect. You could tell where he would be in other respects and so would be able to predict his behavior. But people had two positions on it. What had two positions on it? People had two positions on it. Oh, no, now, come along. They have one position on the tone scale, or they have one person. If we're only dealing with one guy here, why, then, of course, he'd have just one position on the tone scale. But if we're dealing with two guys, so on. Auditors, by the way, this was not very unobserved. Auditors, right after the release of the chart of human evaluation, started coming up with this fact. You know, these people are on this scale in two places. Yeah, something wrong here. Well, actually, they're on the scale in three places. They're not on the scale in the third place, but the third place is the manifestation after you've taken the first and second places. See, we find the body's place on the tone scale, and then there's place something else on the tone scale, and you composite these two, and you get a higher reading. Fascinating. But it certainly showed that there was a wild variable going on here, and an investigator looks for wild variables. It's the banker who looks for sure bets. Anytime you find anything behaving in a wild and unpredictable fashion, then by golly, you would certainly better investigate it. Like Zero. Zero was never suspected really of behaving in a wild and unpredictable fashion, but it certainly was, because mathematical equations behave that way. We found out every time we had zero in a mathematical equation, the equation could be said to do anything. Okay, so there was a variable, and that variable zero. Of course, I knew that zero was a variable 25 years ago. But I couldn't quite say wherein it was a variable, which is what we get into immediately, because we've moved into the field of mathematics, and we've moved into the field there must be something else in life. What's this all about? What's this variable? You mean a fellow is on the tone scale or he's not on the tone scale? Either the tone scale is valid or not valid? Well, the tone scale seemed to be valid. If you would accept the place where the people were on the tone scale at least twice. And quite valid. So what's the variable? The tone scale wrong? No, tone scale seems to be doing a good job. But what else is going on here? Well, something else must be going on. There must be somebody else or something else. And we could say, well, we're all schizophrenics, you see, and just wash our hands of the whole thing by applying a label to it. That's the psychiatric method. Every time they find a strange manifestation, they just put a new label on it and make the student memorize this new label, and they're all set. That's because they have no goal of healing. You may never want to forget that when you're talking to psychiatry and so forth, or really protesting against its practices or something of the sort, is you are looking at an organization or a practice that doesn't have a goal, as you would define a goal. It hasn't a certain standard. You could say to somebody, why do you treat these people? And he would look at you blankly. You possibly don't recognize that until you've talked to one of these fellows. You're talking to somebody who has no goal for his particular action. He could say to make him more quiet or this or that, but he would change his mind in the next couple of minutes. You're just pressing him, so he's giving you answers to get rid of you. The upshot of it is he doesn't have any goal in the situation. Well, we were pressing forward on a goal in the situation. We had a belief there that you could change behavior and make people better and so forth. Well, if this is the case, we just don't apply a label and describe something and go off and leave it. Here is a variable. What is it? And it took me a year to find out what the hell it was. And one day, almost by accident, I was running a lady on responsibility, plus and minus concepts. And she went right straight out of her head. Just like that. And once having exteriorized, all of a sudden she began to process like a dream. Well, she'd never processed like a dream before. So I started running her while she was, quote, outside. I was well aware of the psychiatric observation of exteriorized people. Very well aware of it. It runs this way, and don't ever let a psychiatrist tell you that it ever ran any other way, because it never did. People are out of their heads sometimes. They have this delusory idea, you see, that they're outside their body. And if you give them enough electric shocks, you can get them in again. All he had to do was tell somebody who had this, quote, delusion, unquote, that he was outside of his head to go back into his head, and the person probably would have, just like that. However, in Santa Ana, for instance, a girl who exteriorized while walking out of a theater, if I remember rightly, she exteriorized and found herself outside of her body and found the body walking down the street, and she followed it down the street, and she could evidently control it from outside. But she spoke to people about this, and they booed at her, and they got very upset, and she got more and more frantic and upset because she was outside of this body, and psychiatry gave this otherwise sane girl 250 electric shocks. 250 electric shocks. Of course, inevitably, if you give anybody that many electric shocks, you will, one, knock every tooth out of their heads, because electric shock is nothing to play with. I mean, let's throw somebody under a truck as a therapy, same thing. And broke her spine and crippled her and never got her back in her head. You see? Concentrate on the body. Concentrate on the body. There's something else out here, but let's concentrate on that body, you see? That's what we can look at. That's what we can get our hands on, because that's all we can punish and so enforce our commands. We can't punish, of course, we can't enforce our commands, and if we depart from the whole field and theater of the body, why, of course, we become powerless, because the only way you can really enforce a command at that tone level is to hit something, shock it, hurt it, beat it. Punishment as follow orders. The level of the military, the lower level of psychiatry, more or less the level of government and control the world around. In order to really communicate with something, the best way to do is hit it. And this is just a dramatization of the part of society. Well, that wasn't a case, by the way, which triggered off any thinking on my part. I didn't hear about that case till a few months ago. But I knew that psychiatry and Freud had already mentioned detached personalities. And by that, they simply meant the person had a detached attitude toward life. He would let anything happen, you see. And every once in a while, people had this delusion that they were outside of their bodies. I paid no attention to it simply because in doing all of this research, I made it my first law that any field which had been unproductive of results was a field that we would junk as far as investigation is concerned until such times as we knew something good in that field. But we wouldn't take the field and endlessly plow it, because all it had ever grown was dragon's teeth. See, We just take the whole field of Christianity and say, look at all the wars it produced, the Crusades, the hypocrisy, the financial control system, the tithe system of Ireland, on and on and on and on and on. All these things are Christianity. Therefore, is Christianity the answer to existence? Should we look in Christianity for answer to existence? And the answer is no. No. Because it doesn't produce an existence, therefore it must have a paucity of factors in it which alter and improve existence. It's just on this hard, crude logic. But when you're looking at all the data in the universe, believe me, you'd better do some compartmenting of some kind or another to find out what you're going to look at. And what I finally found that I ought to look at was I ought to look at people. Just like the physical scientist, he would get along so much better if he just go out once in a while and look at a rock. Instead of reading about them all the time, like the girl I saw Cartoon Esquire one time, fella sitting over on the far end of the couch reading the Kinsey Report. They never do anything about it, you know. They just read about it. All right. Obviously, people could be exteriorized, and all of a sudden I had an exteriorization on my hands, and I made a very, very well preclear out of this person quite rapidly. And, maybe because I processed them outside and found out they were not being subjected to their reactive bank. Wonderful. They weren't getting the same stimulus-response reactions as they would get while inside. Obviously, it had something to do with facsimiles, geographical locations. All right, let's just take it as an item that the individual is this kind of a unit. On further study, he found out that he was an energy production unit. He found out on further study that he was a space production unit. Found out in further study that he could exteriorize as easily as he could locate himself in space, that people could exteriorize easily, located themselves easily, and didn't get lost, that people who got lost couldn't exteriorize. Then there was Thetan positioning himself in space, actually. And went along with this line of that, and finally, there was no slightest doubt to the fact that we had the guy as a space energy production unit. And the theory, of course, of the definition of zero, he had no mass, he had no wavelength, he had no position in the time, and so forth, all held good. So he was a true static, which was capable of producing this. The theta mess theory, which was an intuitive theory at all, was worked out to this degree. It was just proven to that degree. It became useful some more. And a theory is never more useful than it's proven out. And so we had exteriorization. A little further look, we found out the individual, while exteriorized, was being subjected to influences which were not reactive bank influences. Same thing, you might say, he's subjected to other determined influences, but very far from the same thing. They aren't facsimiles. He's not being subjected to facsimiles. What is he being subjected to? And a little further investigation on it, many months, really, finally discovered that the individual was being subjected to his own machinery. It was real machinery. And he put up machines, and he'd make them up, and they'd do certain things, and he made them with postulates, and he made these machines always with, one, the postulate, which was its purpose, and the fact it would resist all effects, and, finally, that it would be hidden and forgotten. And this was what the Thetan was operating with. And also that the Thetan had mass and something, nothing. He was something actually senior to something and nothing because he could make either. All right, his criteria was this and that, but the point was we had another point of structure here, another point of anatomy. Two more points of anatomy then showed up. We are now looking at four points of anatomy. The machines, which seem to have a life of their own. The Thetan, who is the individual you were processing. The body, which is the form and the identity. And the reactive banks, facsimiles, which are compartmented into facsimiles and created images. And thus you have the anatomy which we are studying. The additional anatomy is, of course, is the manifestations of collections of thetans, collections of bodies, and on up the dynamics. But we were never looking at, quote, I, unquote. We were looking at a composite which had four types of life. And so, quote, I, as used by Homo sapiens, is plural and is a third dynamic expression. And unless you recognize that, you'll get into the same bog the psychiatry got into, which talks about multivalent personalities and split personalities and so on. Of course the fellow has split personalities, four guys. But the person you're processing is the thing. So much for structure.